Welcome, dear listeners, to another episode of Afternoon Satsang. We are meeting you after the beautiful conclusion of the sports meet season. I think there is one program still left which will be held today. The program is a presentation by the students of the music college. By pretty much we have concluded the annual sports and cultural meet of this year. So to talk about the things which were happening in the Prashanthi Nilayam in the past couple of days, and also continuing our program on the Satyam Shivam Sundaram episode which we've been doing for the past few months, I invite on behalf of all of you, Brother Arvind, Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and as always, it's a pleasure and privilege to be part of this satsang. You know, the sports meet, you just spoke about it, it triggers off so many memories, so many thoughts and so many feelings. But one predominant feeling, you know, goes back to the time when sports meet actually began. We heard it during one of the, on the Shankranti day actually, on the prize distribution day morning, when the warden of the Anandpur campus spoke of how the sports meet actually originated.
Right.
You know, I remember the two, three versions that I've heard of the same story, but combining all the versions, it comes to this that, you know, the Anandpur students, the girls, they decided that every time Swami visited their campus, instead of just showing a few cultural items like dance or, you know, singing and music or elocution, they decided that let us, you know, make Swami happy by presenting him some physical activity, some items of physical activity. And that is how in their ground they had the first ever sports meet. And Swami was so impressed with them, he told them that, why are you ready to perform the same thing in Prashanthi Nilayam, in Puttaparthi? They were thrilled because this is such a great opportunity. They said, yes, Swami. Swami had them perform the same thing in the small ground that existed. It was to a limited audience, to a private audience, where the students of the Anandpur College performed these. You know, they even did martial arts.
Okay.
They did some kind of dances. They did that maypole. We have videos of that in our archives, some of them. And when they did this, Swami was so happy. The next year the same thing happened. So the second sports meet too was only by the Anandpur campus, if we can call it that way. And then, you know, some of the teachers here said that Swami came to them and said, look at those girls, how wonderful things they are doing. You boys, useless fellows, you are not doing anything. What is it? You must outshine them actually, because you are all supposed to be physically more capable and all that. You know, Swami triggered them in that fashion. So the next year, the boys also came up with some of their items, and that is how sports meet began. But then, you know, it was a competitive meet. You know, in the boys event, there used to be the athletics, there used to be the high jump, just like any other athletics meet. And I remember one incident which Pallav sir, the warden of the current warden of the Prashanthi Nilayam campus, narrated. He said that there was once a volleyball match between the Prashanthi Nilayam campus and the Brindavan campus of the institute. Now, the Prashanthi Nilayam campus had an upper hand, an advantage in two ways. One is they had a coach who was a very good volleyball player himself.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, it was a postgraduate campus, so the boys are a little senior,
right,
by 2 years at least, 2 years to 3 years senior than the undergraduate boys. So a match was scheduled between the Prashanthi Nilayam campus and the Brindavan campus, and Swami came to watch the match.
Mm-hmm.
The first set, the Prashanthi Nilayam boys gave the Brindavan boys a drubbing, and they were up by 1-0. It was supposed to be a best of three.
Okay.
The second set, again, Prashanthi Nilayam beat Brindavan, so it was 2-0. And then Swami asked, who won? I said, Swami, Prashanthi Nilayam, Puttaparthi. Swami said, play on. So they said, oh, maybe Swami wants a best of five match. So they played on the third set, which again Prashanthi Nilayam won. Swami asked, who won? They said, Prashanthi Nilayam. Swami said, play on. 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. And Swami is going on telling them to play on. That is when, you know, the Prashanthi Nilayam campus boys, they suddenly felt that, you know, maybe Swami wants Brindavan to win. So they said, Swami, they said, Swami, we are going to play again. Swami said, yes, play on. And this time, some of the boys of the Prashanthi Nilayam campus purposely began to underperform. And the coach, who was not actually, if we can say, from the system,
in the loop,
he was an external, yeah, he was not in the loop, he was not also actually born and bred in the system. So he was aghast. He said, why are you underperforming? Come on, play well, play well. And they say that he was taken out from the premises there, and he was told, no, you calm, you cool your heels here, you don't understand this. And Brindavan boys beat Prashantilyam boys. The scoreline was 5-1, but it didn't matter anymore. Nobody looked at the scoreline. The Brindavan boys won. And Swami asked, what happened? You know, Swami, though he has seen the whole match, he asks, what happened now? Swami, Brindavan won. Immediately, Swami got up from his chair. He said, both have won now. Puttaparthi won, Brindavan also won. Both are winners. Having said that, you know, Swami walked out. Such a beautiful message Swami gave, because that is what has shaped the sports meet today. The sports meet has changed from a competitive event into a cooperative display event where all come together. And it is seen on Shankaranti Day, isn't it, Prem? Because every campus gets the championship cup.
Right. And, you know, talking about the origins of the sports meet, and you said there are different versions of it. You know, in Swami's own way, Swami did this.
Mm.
And just like how the Anantapur campus believes rightly that, you know, the seeds of the sports meet lies with them. I remember talking to an old student who studied in the school. You know, they were the first few batches of the school students where they had 11th and 12th coming from outside. And they remember an event they held behind the Ishwarama school.
Okay.
You know, they put up a stage with all these, you know, the coconut branches put together and tied up. And they all got together and made a stage for Swami. And they made Swami sit on it. And they did, you know, these little races. What you would have, lemon and spoon and all those kind of simple things. And they had a few demonstrations, some drills. And they believe that that was the beginning, you know, to put it like that. Because, you know, and the other thing which you mentioned was how the competitive events, because all said and done, when you have a cricket match or you have a volleyball match,
you have a winner and a loser.
You have a winner and a loser, and you have very few participating.
Correct.
So the desire to have more of the students performing in front of Swami actually started shifting from competitive events to presentations in front of Swami. And that is when, you know, this became an event in the calendar of the Prashantinilayam, you know, activities. And that's how we have what we have as the sports meet, which is one of the most colorful events. And in fact, you could even say that is, in the entire year, that is one day you can be sure there is not going to be bhajans in the mandir.
The only day, yes.
The only day, because Swami permits that the entire congregation happens in the Hillview Stadium, and all that happens is just seeing those sports events.
Exactly.
And
Swami returns.
Aarti to Swami is always there. But there were occasions when Swami would come back and they would have bhajans in the mandir. But invariably that used to be the day where you had the license not to have bhajans and Vedam chanting in the mandir.
Yes, I remember, you know, Swami would be early in the morning in the ground. And then when he returns, there would be a mad rush on the road because all the children will be running towards the mandir. Because when Swami's car comes back, you know, Swami has his meager lunch in the interview room and then returns to his abode. And as he walks out of the interview room, all the students who had performed that morning would have been arrayed into their respective groups and formations. And on many occasions, Swami would grant group photographs with them, and Swami would walk back to either Yajur Mandir or before that to Purnachandra. In the evening also the same thing would repeat. And invariably, as Swami would walk out of the interview room, they would have the aarti performed. That was the only schedule. However, yes, after the Mahasamadhi, they have changed and have got some kind of a schedule in place where after the sports event, there are two bhajans that are sung in the mandir and aarti is given because the Mahasamadhi area, the Sai Sannidhi area, has to be curtained. So before that, aarti is given and then it's curtained. But you know, Prem, coming back to the thing about everybody being winners, it started off that time with Prashantinilayam and Brindavan being winners. Today, you know, if we see on the 14th of January, there were 9 cups given away, 9 championship cups, and each of them for different aspects of the sports meet, which is unique to those respective campuses. So we had the primary school, the Ishwaramma school, the higher secondary school, the Mirpuri College of Music, the nursing college for women, the Mudenhalli campus of the institute, the Brindavan campus, the Anantapur campus, and the Prashantinilayam campus, all these 9 in number. It was like 9 cups, chancellor's cups for best performance during sports meet. Beautifully bringing out Swami's message of, you know, Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Ubhunaktu, let us stay together, let's grow together, and let us all celebrate together.
Right. You know, talking of sports meets, for us, of course, you know, it was something which we did for Swami, and we could understand the joy it gave us, because all said and done, it might be sports, it might be a thrilling event, but the essence was we did it for Swami. You know, you do a drama for Swami, you do sports for Swami. So when it is for Swami, it gives you the joy. So it's understandable, but it is indeed intriguing what Swami does through these various processes, you know, where physical activity. Because I met somebody yesterday who is a visiting faculty, who has been here only for the past few months. And being a visiting faculty during this time, he had the opportunity to associate himself with the sports meet happening.
Mm.
So I just casually asked him, you know, how's it going? How did you enjoy? And he said, we just concluded a period of purification. So I said, I just thought that he's trying to put it in beautiful words.
Mm.
But when I looked at him, I felt that he really meant it.
Mm.
And he said, you know, I cannot describe what this period was. And he said it in a manner that you will not understand it, because you've been through it all the while.
Mm.
So he doesn't know what it is to come from outside and go through it. And he said, it is a process of purification, and I cannot say, it is not even world class, it is not international class, you cannot put it in that. This is something beyond all that, what it does to you and what it does to your students.
It's otherworldly. And, you know, it is said that the Uttarayanam, which happens to fall every year on the Shankranti day, the day when the sun moves northwards, and Swami, in the Shankranti discourse, so beautifully in the Kulwant Hall, when we heard, Swami said that this is the time when the sun moves towards the north where the Himalayas are. This is the time when effort should move Godwards in the heart. So Swami has said that any spiritual effort that is done during this period is bound to be crowned with success. And in fact, he says that is why even the great Bhishma stayed alive with arrows piercing every part of his body for almost 56 days before he could give up his body on this Uttarayanam holy day. And so Swami says, for you to be on the spiritual path, you have to prepare for that in the days preceding the Uttarayanam. And you know, the beauty of Swami is, he makes it so easy and natural for the children and students to do that. You know, because, come to look at it, you know, you prepare for it for a month, more than a month. And at the end of it, you are given 2 minutes, 3 minutes on the field.
Okay.
And for whom are you performing? I mean, what is it? You're not going to be given a prize. You're not going to get an award. You're not going to... Nothing. You might not even come on screen on the camera. Because if it's a mass item of 150 for 2 minutes, what is the probability of you coming on the screen? That also is not there. Then why on earth do you do it? It is very natural that everybody does it for Swami.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, that used to be a kind of slogan for us when we used to prepare for sports meet. Let us do it to bring a smile on Swami's face. We slog, we get burns, we may get injuries, we may, whatever may happen. But at the end of it, when we perform and we see Swami smiling, we feel that's it, it is done. And when people prepare in this feeling, with this feeling and in this intention for a month, what greater spiritual effort is needed? Because whatever happens, you don't mind because you're doing it for God. I had a feeling that, you know, maybe after the Mahasamadhi, this feeling could have diluted, you know. Because now, what, I mean, you're not doing it in the sense, there is no physical Swami sitting there and seeing, so what do you mean by doing it for Swami? And one of the students, you know, he gave such a poignant reply, you know. He said, brother, when Swami used to come, I have performed when Swami was on stage, and when Swami is physically not on stage now also.
Mm-hmm.
He says the difference is when Swami was on stage, we would constantly be looking at him, wondering whether he is looking at us. And I remember one or two occasions when we were performing, Swami had actually gone backstage.
Right.
Swami was not on stage, but you remember, Prem, they would not pause the program for right. Swami to come back. The program goes on. So he says, that time we used to feel so disappointed that, you know, oh, Swami didn't see our program only. And there have been occasions when Swami got up in middle and left. We felt that, you know, Swami didn't see. That kind of disappointment was there. But he says, now I know that I better do it very carefully, because from above he's watching. He's watching. I feel he's watching me personally. That time it was Swami sitting on the stage and he's watching the whole. So if his head is turned to the other side, illusion is so powerful, Maya is so powerful that you feel that he's not looking at me, he's looking at the other side. But he says, now that is not there. Now throughout the 3 minutes or 4 minutes of my performance, I feel Swami is watching me. Swami is watching me. Let me do it. And therefore, I get motivated to do it. And I found this as a phenomenal revelation for me.
they're talking about Uttrayanam and talking about doing things for God. You know, that is where the line between spiritual and worldly acts blur. Because one thing which I remember in association with Uttrayanam is many times when Swami would give jobs to boys, when Swami would bless a student to do research, Swami would tell them that wait till Uttrayanam. You know, many of them, because you know that the academic year begins in June. But there were many times when Swami would pull it along and Swami would ask the research scholars to join in January, you know, after the Uttrayanam starts. You look at it, the reason why Uttrayanam is special is a very spiritual one. As Swami said, it's good for spiritual progress, and you know, that is why Bhishma did. And where the mind is going upwards, as the sun travels northwards. That's what Swami said. But here is Swami saying that choose Uttrayanam, which is a spiritual period, for starting a worldly task. There itself giving the message that there is no difference between what is worldly and what is spiritual. Take up whatever you're taking, let the intent be spiritual. The content may be worldly for the world's view, but let the intent be spiritual and start it during a spiritual time. And many, many times I remember students would wait for a few months because Swami would say, wait till Uttrayanam, I'll give you a job after Uttrayanam starts.
And that is how this, even this famous term called waiting boys, the waiting period, waiting time, all that have come.
And you know, Swami had his own timing, and that is why it, you know, in one side, here was divinity, which is beyond time, which is beyond the rituals, which is beyond cultures. You know, you talk of Indianness, Hinduism, but he's a universal God. But still, for some reason, Swami would see all these things. You know, we were absolutely sure when we were students that on a Monday, Swami will come before 7:30 for darshan. Because 7:30 to 9 is Rahukalam, and Swami will not start his darshan, you know, during Rahukalam. Of course, there were times when Swami would break all these things. But you had a certain idea that Swami would follow such things. You know, when Swami calls a marriage party for an interview, Swami will make sure that it is after Rahukalam.
Correct.
You know, if it's on a Saturday, Swami would call them after 10:30 sometimes. You know, the bhajans would go on for so long only because Swami wants to spend the time after the so-called unholy period is over.
Now, I used to wonder, what is this? I mean, how do these Rahu Kalam, unholy time, wrong period, how can they affect the avatar? And what is the message that Swami is giving? How can it be possible? How can it be possible that he is following it? Why should we follow it? Because if he follows it, we will follow it. But why should I? How can something be more powerful than Swami? How can something affect me if Swami is there? You know, these questions used to arise in me. And you know, on deeper introspection, I realized that probably one of the reasons why Swami did this is to arouse such questions in themselves. You know, it is only when I start thinking, how is it that Rahu Kal can affect me? Am I not with Swami? Forget it, with Swami. Swami says, I am Swami. And you know, these kind of questions is what instigate us towards realizing our true identity, possibly. And maybe that is the reason why all these are kept. Because when it came to it, Swami has broken it on numerous occasions. I remember on two occasions, at least distinctly, when Swami chose Friday the 13th to shower his blessings. You know, the inauguration of the Prema Jyoti exhibition, which traveled all around India and created waves for its fantastic effort. The first time Swami blessed it was on February 13th, July the 13th in 2008. Or 2007. So, Friday the 13th is considered unlucky. In the same way, as you said, Rahu Kal, many times Swami has done, and Swami has said, when you have Daivanugraha, what can the Navagraha do? When you have blessings of God, what can the nine planets affect you for?
One thing I remember is during the children's festival, during the 80th birthday, Swami started it bang on Rahu Kalam. In fact, he even mentioned it during the discourse. We have started it in the peak of Rahu Kalam.
So I think that these things Swami would also practice and follow, I mean, appear to be following it, so that we ask these questions. Because in life there's nothing like the right answer. It's always about asking the right question. And that is what all spiritual masters do. They do not dole out answers because there's nothing like a right answer. The same question has 1,000 answers for 1,000 aspirants. The spiritual master just ensures that the aspirant asks the right question, because the answers are all within, which is the purpose of Educare, which Swami says, to bring out from within. So I think this is the right question, that is, why, if we are the immortality, if we are children of immortality, if we are Prema Swarupulara, why are we getting affected by Rahu Kalam? Swami says, good. That's the right question. Proceed. You know, because you remember Kamala Sarathy, we were speaking about her when she came to Swami. She was wondering as to how people are bonding so much with this village lad. What is so magical about him that everybody loves him so much? Then she says, is it possible that he embodies divine love? And we narrated how Swami at exactly that time comes behind her, calls her and says, that's the right question, ponder along that way and you will reach your answers.
Right.
Swami never comes and gives the answers. The avatar never gives answers. But the avatar always encourages to ask the right questions. And asking those right questions, each one of us derives answers in our own way, which is enough to convince us, and that is all the Lord wants.
Talking about Uttarayanam, talking about the 14th of January, interestingly, 14th of January, we've discussed this before, was the day Swami laid the foundation stone for our Prashantanilayam Ashram. Right, Swami chose Uttarayanam even for that, and I think that was in 1948. So that maybe is the link which we'll use to go back to 1948 and 1950s.
1948, when we have already spoken about how Kasturi Garu, Kasturi came to Swami. And, you know, the beautiful thing about Kasturi's life is that till his life, if we see on a, you know, broad vision, mm-hmm. you realize that for him, life before Sai was filled with difficulties. And life with Sai, after Sai entered his life, was one blissful journey. Not because it didn't have difficulties.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to add, because his life before Swami had difficulties. His life after Swami also had difficulties. But, you know, the humor with which he writes his autobiography shows that what a difference in perception which he went through because of Swami's presence in his life. And that is what it matters. You know, things in the world hardly change. If today, Arvind, you are, you know, realize the world around you will not change.
Exactly.
But the world changes for you.
That is what the avatar does. Exactly. He means the world is not to be changed. The world is a stage where the drama has to go on. But your world changes, and that's what happened to Kasturi. Because he had a very, 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 very tough childhood. You know, he lost his father to smallpox. At that time, smallpox had not been eradicated from the world. So, he lost his father to smallpox. Later on, his mother too had smallpox, but somehow she battled it and survived.
Mm-hmm.
And then, his mother and his mother's sister, all of them had to take refuge at his grandfather's place. And they were not a rich household. They were not even a middle-class household. They were a poor household. It was so tough for them to get their food. In fact, their grandfather contemplated that Kasturi and his cousin should be sent to a Veda Pathshala.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Pathshala where you are taught only Vedas. A school where you are taught only Vedas. And you are given 2 meals a day. But his mother pawns the jewelry that she has. And with that, sends him to get an English education. He says that was one of the most powerful currencies that his mother armed him with. And we can, seeing his book, we can realize why and how beautifully he has garnered that currency of the English language. He was wedded at a tender age of 14.
Which was common in those days.
Yes. And he had to take on family responsibilities of supporting with a job at the age of 21. And even in job, he had a tough time. There were politics in the university where he was teaching. And he was not a person who was a politician, and therefore he felt that he was in a losing game where he would not gain in respect, nor was he gaining in terms of his, you know, emoluments. His salary was low, and he did ghost writing for so many people,
mm-hmm.
so that he could add on to the meager family income. And just when it seemed to be stabilizing, the destabilizing action took place where he lost his dear son to typhoid. You know, to a thing like typhoid, which is so treatable today, he lost his son. And 10 days after India won her independence, we have spoken about it, he lost his son. So he was in a total kind of, cruelly struck by destiny. He just did not know. That was when he came to Swami, and everything changed after that. As you rightly said, not that he didn't face any difficulties, but he learned how to face them with the Lord by the side. I think we can enter Kasturi's life and see the beautiful 1949, 1950, 1951, because that is the part of Satyam Shyam Sundaram we are dealing with now, after this little break.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We're talking about the life of Professor Kasturi and how he came to Swami. We've spoken about the interesting events which led to the marriage of his daughter.
The marriage proposal being accepted.
Yeah, the marriage proposal being accepted, being maneuvered by Swami, and how the family of Parameshwar Iyer were brought around, and Kasturi was pleading for that, and where, you know, interestingly, Kasturi writes in his book that this Baba is worth cultivating. You know, from that kind of a mindset, how he comes around and how he comes to be somebody who was there and witnessed and was there to speak about Swami so much. And, you know, interestingly, talking about satsangs and talking about speaking of Swami, I was talking to one of our lecturers yesterday, and I just said, just casually said that, you know, sir, you should also start writing a book. You know, maybe it's time to start compiling. Forget about writing a book and publishing it, but maybe you should start compiling. And he shared with me one interaction which happened between a devotee and Swami, where this devotee was told by many who knew the experiences she had that she should one day write a book. So she went up to Swami and said, Swami, people are telling that I should write a book. What do you command me? Should I write a book? Swami said, not necessary. You go around giving speeches, because it is easier to get devotion through Shravanam.
Hmm.
That's what Swami said. And interestingly, that's the opportunity which Swami is giving all of us, because not only are we speaking here, but as we always say, we are the first listeners to whatever Swami is having to say through us. And, you know, talking of Kasturi, we played a clip from his talk. What a beautiful speaker he was. And I remember some of my classmates recollecting how he used to come every week to the primary school and talk to them, and how his content was so well, structured and tailor-made for children. You know, he would talk of angels, and he would talk of, you know, out of the world beings. To become that kind of a devotee of Swami, the journey which he went through, I think one very important period which began this changeover was his first trip to Prashanthi Nilayam, when Swami invited him to come and have a look, because he requests Swami that, seeing the devotion this Parameshwar Iyer and this family have for Swami, he requests that the marriage should be conducted in Prashanthi Nilayam, in Puttaparthi, I'm sorry. And Swami says, yeah, definitely, but come before that and have a look at what are the facilities available. And he says, bring your wife along, because she knows better.
I think, you know, Swami must have been thinking that, Kasturi, you have no idea how backward Puttaparthi is.
Right.
Come and have a look. You're simply, you know, you're so thrilled with the fact that I fixed your
an expression
daughter's
of gratitude
wedding.
You want to.
So anyway, you have no idea what you have signed up for. But well, Kasturi comes to Puttaparthi in August 1948. He comes along with his wife, and the journey itself shakes him up. Physically, literally shakes him, because right. He travels through a rickety horse carriage, he travels through a coal-driven bus and a train journey. It's a long journey, at the end of which they come to Puttaparthi, which is really very remote and very remote and very distant from the city life that Kasturi is used to. He sees the Pathamandiram,
right,
which is like a small shed which has a courtyard at the back, and towards one side of the courtyard are two small rooms which he's told are, out of which one of them is Swami's room, he's told. And the other room, he's told, is the Korika room, where, you know, Swami grants interviews. And then opposite to that, there are again two small rooms where he said that one of them is Swami's bathrooms, and the other room is where a small generator is housed. You know, this generator gives power during the festivals of Dasara, birthday, other ceremonies, because right. Electrification was very, it was very inadequate.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever there at all. I think only the little well-off ones could afford to have a connection to the grid.
Oh, yes. Correct. Now that you pointed it out, that's why the generator existed.
Right.
So that any special function, lights could be put on. And so he saw that everybody is just placing their bedding and bedrolls and other luggage in the courtyard at different places, some under the trees. And
he sees a series of kitchens where, you know, food is being cooked by their respective families.
Different foods being cooked.
You can imagine what a shock he would have had, because he describes his first couple of meetings with Swami in Bangalore. And those must have been really devotees of certain influence, you know. He talks about meeting him in the Bull Temple Road, in the commissioner's bungalow.
Bungalow. Hmm.
seeing Swami being hosted in such places, and here is he coming to the abode of Swami, and he must have been really shocked that there's just another room in that courtyard is being pointed out as Swami's room.
And Swami walks out, you know. Swami walks out and he just sits on any bedding that is available there, and he starts talking to everybody, and Kasturi is simply amazed. He's seeing that this Baba, who is capable of, you know, staying in the households of kings and influential people, is now sitting on a bedding roll and talking like any common man, and he's regaling the people, because wherever there is Swami, there is a lot of energy, there's a lot of enthusiasm, there's a lot of laughter, which, you know, really makes Kasturi envious, because he doesn't understand Telugu. He doesn't understand Telugu tongue, and he just feels, oh, how I wish I can understand.
Right.
And it is literally, you know, Kasturi is floored. He's, without his knowledge, developing devotion and love towards Swami, and he's just not able to fathom how and why. Because, you know, Kasturi all his life has been a specialist writer, specialist in the sense he pricks the pride, pokes and bursts the bubble of ego of so many people, and he has prided himself at exposing so many such false Babas and Swamis. And now, without his knowledge, without any reason, he is just getting drawn to Swami. He is just feeling love developing in his heart towards Swami, and he's not able to fathom why, but he's enjoying it, so he doesn't want to even stop that from happening. It's indeed a magical feeling that any one of us who have come to Swami would have experienced.
And it's very interesting, you know, how Swami attracts different people through different ways.
Mm.
As you described, such a witty writer and who prides himself of his wit and humor. Here was Swami who was so effortlessly being humorous and, you know, being able to create laughter and mirth wherever he was.
Spontaneously.
And that would have definitely been something which really attracted him, because he was not a reclusive sadhu or a person who was drawn and dignifiedly encased in a silence. But here was somebody who was with the people. You know, he would just come and sit on the bedroll, as you said, and move around. And that description of Swami, which he says, is so beautiful, you know, because he's sitting there just like everybody else, but there is a charm which cannot be described. He's amongst them, but he's beyond all of them.
Exactly. And there is that awe, you know, that aura of awe, because he looks and calls Kasturi by name. You know, here's somebody who is less than half your age. Swami was 22 then, in 1948. Swami calls Kasturi by name and he says, Kasturi, you don't worry, listen, the wedding will be performed here. And he points out to an area where the kitchen can be set up. He points out to another area where the guests can be seated for food. And he says, you know, don't spend too much money. All the things that you look forward to in a good marriage, that I will provide. I will shower everyone with joy. You know, we often mistake a wedding, you know, the purpose of a wedding with the grandeur that we can show off, that money can buy. It is so wrong. You know, we see nowadays, if you see the wedding, some of the weddings go into lakhs, even into crores of rupees, which is almost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Such lavish weddings, imagine that huge amount of wealth that is just being spent in a single day. I mean, Swami, from the beginning, he used to cut on it. It is not as if in the beginning Swami had no access to wealth and therefore Kasturi's daughter's wedding was so simple and serene. Even later on, you know, as late as the 85th birthday of Bhagwan, we had a mass marriage ceremony where I remember even 5 students got married,
right,
in the Kulwant Hall. And even that ceremony, though was full of grandeur and thrill and joy and it was vibrant, it was not pompous. It was not, you know, reeking with effluence, anything like that. It was a very simple ceremony filled with a lot of reverence, respect, love and culture. And that is what Swami always emphasized. And when Swami emphasized the same to Kasturi, Kasturi was very much able to appreciate it, because he had come from such a weak financial background.
And that was the interesting thing, you know, because if you look at how marriages were performed earlier and now, the idea of having an elaborate feast, idea of having people come and visit, is that here is a young couple which is venturing into, you know, a very difficult phase into their life.
A long odyssey.
Right, and they need all the blessings of all of you. So it was an invitation to bless. But now what it has become is like an invitation to witness. Here we are performing a grand ceremony, come and witness it. And that is what Swami was addressing. You know, what you do an elaborate marriage for is for the blessings. And I am here to give you that blessings. I am here to give you that joy. So you don't need any ostentation to bring you that joy and blessings, because I am there to fulfill that. Have a solemn ceremony. That's what Swami was saying.
I think we can carry that message forward even today, you know, because all the blessings that we need, Swami will give. You know, Swami used to say, people who mind don't matter. People who matter don't mind.
Don't mind.
You know, in the same logic holds good here. The significance is there should be an atmosphere of cordiality, love, reverence, respect, and you know, a kind of, as you say, a blessing-filled atmosphere, so that this couple can embark on its holy journey, on its new journey together. Rather than, till now it has been an individual journey towards God, now it's a journey together towards God. So for creating this, we need only God's blessings, and God's blessings pours on us through different people.
Right.
So anybody who is aware of this will not mind if, you know, ostentation is absent. In fact, they will be happy because they have come to celebrate the togetherness. And those who actually mind it, as Swami says, they don't matter. They don't matter. Their blessings are not blessings at all. They have just come for pomp and show. So even today, it's not as if because Swami is physically not there, let's make it grand. But let us do what is necessary and let us keep the focus in mind. I think that powerful message was driven home to Kasturi and to everybody else also. And not only during that period, throughout his life, throughout his physical life, Swami has always emphasized on the significance and spirituality of his event being given more importance and focus rather than the external show, pomp and grandeur.
Right. And the other aspect of it is, here is Kasturi, you know, with to whom in the first interaction Swami says, you will write my Jiva Charitra. You know, I will make you meet the right people and I will make you get the right stories for you to construct my life,
biography.
And you can imagine that such a person who is there in Prashanthi Nilam would be drinking in everything which he is seeing. You know, the people who are around. Because he was seeing the kind of people who were there to serve Swami. You know, there was a person who was a commissioner, and there was a person who was a owner of a mill. And there were people who were very, very humble. The local people who were there to serve Swami. And there was the Kuppam family. You know, they were not very well off compared to the other dignitaries who were visiting Swami. But each of them considered themselves equal in the eyes of Swami. Not only Swami treated them as equals, even they considered themselves equal when they approached Swami. And these were all the things which were actually surprising him. And as you said, Swami was showing him the area where the cooking could be done, and Swami was giving them the instructions like where what could be stored. And Swami said, you'll have to inform in advance about the firewood. And then Swami sends word for his father, saying that, you know, he is running the store which helps the devotees who come here, so you can place your order with him.
That is an interesting point, Prem, because Swami calls his father by the name, by the term Griham Abbai, which means the boy of the house. And he calls Ishwaramma, his mother, as Griham Ammai, the girl of the house. And this is another thing that fascinates Kasturi, because he has seen it is not as if this is the first spiritual personage he's meeting. He has in fact exposed several spiritual person, apparently phony spiritual personages. And he has been through the Ramakrishna order. He has been through a lot of spiritual people in his life. And he says in his book, Loving God, that in his experience, he always sees that whenever there's a spiritual personage, the family members of that spiritual personage try to, you know, put on the cloak of glory that actually belongs to that spiritual personage. So they dictate terms. So you have ashrams where the father of the spiritual personage or the family and relatives of the spiritual personage try to, you know, act as if they themselves are also those spiritual personages. But he says, here when I saw Swami treating his father and his mother also like another devotee, not only is Swami treating them so, they are also humble and loving, and they themselves consider themselves as being devotees of their own so-called son, you know. So he's amazed by this, and he's also touched by the humility of the father, who immediately follows the summons of Swami, who comes and tells Swami that, yes, Swami, everything will be taken care. In fact, Swami tells Kasturi that you can indent on him, because usually people pay him in advance and give their order. But since you're not carried money now. You can indent on him and you can order whatever you wish. He will have them ready, procured for the wedding. And later on when you come, you can pay him the due. This is another thing that thrills Kasturi.
Right. And the two things which strike him when he meets the father of Swami and later when he goes and meets Mother Ishwaramma. Somebody tells him that having come to Parthi, you should go and meet Mother Ishwaramma. He goes to Venkamma's house, Swami's sister, and then meets Ishwaramma. And the things which strike him when he meets these two is, one is the simplicity. You know, they are absolutely simple and absolutely sincere. You know, when the father comes and takes instructions from Swami, they are absolutely sincere and they know with whom they are dealing. And that surprises him actually.
And they are so genuine people. You know, he Kasturi records that when he goes to Venkamma, Swami's sister, physical sister, he goes to her and tells her that, you know, Swami has blessed my daughter to be wedded like this. He says Venkamma erupts in genuine joy. She's so happy for the girl being wedded. Such a kind of happiness which he feels that maybe his own family members may not feel. But he sees that these physical family members of Swami around at that time, they used to feel what Swami, they were Swami's first disciples. You know, the Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, that is, the whole world is my family that Swami propagated. That is what they had also imbibed. In fact, he records that Venkamma was the first bhajan singer.
Right.
And the person who, the personage who would come early in the morning, first thing to fall at Swami's feet and seek blessings, was his 108-year-old grandfather Kondamaraju. Which again is absolutely stunning for Kasturi. So he sees all this happening and he is convinced beyond doubt. You know, these in such rural settings, when he sees such grand things happening, he is definitely sure that there is something magical going on here. It is not any other ordinary personage.
The other thing which he describes is the appearance of Swami, how it is so out of the world, if you say the world is Puttaparthi, you know. Because he met his parents, he's meeting his sister and brothers. Yes, the features do match, but then he has an ethereal beauty around him. Because he says that, you know, those eyes are different. Those pearly white teeth. The persona itself is so different from the local people. And he looks at Swami's feet and he says, it doesn't look like a feet which has trod these thorny paths and, you know, which has climbed the hilly roads here. It has a serenity and softness of a prince or a princess. And that is what he says, that he does not seem to belong to this place, but he is so effortlessly in this place.
Naturally, Prem, you know, Swami himself, when was asked whether his was a Pravesha or Prasava, Prasava meaning conception in the natural manner, Pravesha meaning a divine entry, Swami told, ask Mother Ishwaramma, and she reveals how a blue ball of light entered her. You know, so it is natural that, you know, Swami's beauty is so otherworldly and out of the world, because he is not of the world. It is not as if, you know, there's a gene pool match and he has characteristics and traits of beauty to pick from a gene pool. He has the whole pool which he has created to pick beauty from, and naturally he has picked such beautiful features for the avatar of the age. The love of Swami that we were talking about, you know, which was exuded by all the members of the family. Kasturi sees one more facet of the same love. When, you know, they decide, having got all the instructions, having seen and having had their first visit to Puttaparthi, when they decide that it's time to leave, Kasturi's wife goes to Swami and prays for permission to leave. Swami tells, it is Friday. A daughter should never leave her mother's home on Friday. You know, this is a custom that is followed. I remember I got married on a Friday. So usually the custom is after marriage, the husband and wife go to the husband's home.
Right.
But that night, that evening and night after the marriage, we stayed at my in-law's place, because the same thing, you know, my mother-in-law said that a daughter should not leave her mother's home on a Friday. So it was only the next day that we came home. So in the same, you know, that culture is so rich, and that tradition, you know, Swami says, and a daughter should not leave the mother's home on a Friday. And Kasturi is so bowled over, and the wife is so thrilled. She says, it's my privilege to have Swami as my mother. And this is a 22-year-old lad saying it, huh? It's not...
talking about Swami saying this. I remember when Atal Bihari Vajpayee first came to Swami in 1972 or I think later in the 1970s, he was then the External Affairs Minister of India.
Mm.
And that was the first trip he was making, and Swami called him into his bungalow in Brindavan and had a talk with him. And during that time, you know, Swami filled him with warmth. And he was so touched by Swami's love. In fact, that was the time when Swami told him that one day you will be the Prime Minister of this country.
Mm.
Where it absolutely appeared that it was not going to be a possibility at all. But Swami told him that one day you will be the Prime Minister of this country. And even as, you know, he was leaving Swami's presence, he looked at Swami and said, "Swami, can I come to your home now and then?" Seeking permission to visit Swami whenever he gets the opportunity. He said, I think he said it in Hindi, "Swami, aapka ghar pe kabhi kabhi aa sakta hoon." And Swami's reply was, "This is your mother's house. You can come whenever you want. You know, whenever you want, you can come because this is your mother's house." And exactly, you know, that was what was special about Swami, because Swami meant it the same, may it be an obscure lecturer in the Mysore University, or it was going to be one of the best prime ministers this country was going to have. For everybody, this was a mother's house, wasn't it?
Perfect, Prem. And that is how Kasturi and his wife stay on, actually. And then they realize another reason why Swami actually stopped them from leaving that day. Because the next day, in the evening, Swami takes everybody to the sands of the Chitravati River.
Right.
This beautiful Chitravati session about which we have spoken many times.
It almost appears like Swami is giving him a sample of everything about Puttaparthi in that 2 days which he spends, I think 2 or 3 days which he spends. You know, makes him meet the grandfather, makes him meet the parents, makes him meet a few classmates, you know, gives him a taste of what it is to stay with Swami, gives him a taste of what it is to be in Chitravati with Swami.
Exactly. He gets stories from the parents, he gets stories from Swami's classmates, and that is how he begins to, you know, start seeing similarities, you know, between the way Shirdi Sai came about, you know, with the cholera epidemic, and he hears about how Swami prevented a cholera epidemic with the Pandari Bhajan group.
Right, that happens actually when he's leaving after the stay in Puttaparthi. Swami arranges for him to be taken to Bukkapatnam in a bullock cart by one of his classmates, you know, somebody who studied in a school.
I think that was Keshavaya or something.
Right, one of those classmates who were also part of that Pandari Bhajan group.
Exactly.
And seeing that Kasturi and his wife were eager to know about Swami, he starts telling stories of their childhood days, you know, when Swami would take them to the river and make them have a bath. And then he says that how, because of their Pandari Bhajan group, the cholera epidemic was kept away. And how different towns used to invite them only for this sake. And that's when he realizes, you know, that Hemad Pand or Dabolkar, who writes about Shirdi Baba, who writes the Shirdi Satcharitra, he starts with this incident in Shirdi Satcharitra where Baba grinds wheat and keeps cholera away by asking them to put that wheat around the boundary of the village. And he says that that was the incident which actually inspires him to write the Jeeva Charitra of Shirdi Satcharitra, I mean of Shirdi Baba. And here is he listening to the same incident or something.
He's drinking in all this because he has been told that he has to write the Jeeva Charitra
right.
for Swami. And so he's gathering all details. And as you said, Swami has dished out a menu card for him to show him all the things that happened at Prashantiniliam, at Puttaparthi. There was no Prashantiniliam then, it was still being built. And that is how Swami takes him to the Chitravati also. And there are about 20 people on the sands there. And Kasturi notices that everybody is trying to rush closer to Swami. They want to sit as physically close to Swami as possible. And it is a random area, you know, which Swami has told one of the devotees. I believe there were two people, one who had come from Madras and another person was another industrialist.
Mm-hmm.
Swami tells them to pick a spot. Kasturi has no idea what is this. So they pick up some random spot and Swami goes and sits there. And after sitting there, Swami starts making a heap on the sand. And Kasturi wonders, what is this for?
And he says the circle of devotees comes closer and closer to Swami once he starts doing that.
And he's thinking that maybe, you know, is it a seat for a little boy?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, when the little boy sits, he'll come up to Swami's height. Or he's just wondering, what is this about? When Swami with his index finger begins to draw something on that flattened heap, a conical heap is made and then it's flattened on the top, on which Swami begins to draw something. And now Kasturi is intrigued, so he goes closer and he starts peeping at Swami's drawing skills, and he sees that Swami has drawn some circles, some semicircles, some curves. And as Swami is doing that, he says, You know, I was a very good artist in school. My teachers always commended me on my drawing skills. And even I saw me saying that, Kasturi is thinking, oh my God, your teachers got it all wrong.
I can understand how
bad their judgment was.
An artist, your teacher would have been. That's what he writes.
And then Swami says, now Ganesha is coming. Yes, look, here he comes. And Swami just brushes away the sand, and out is a beautiful image, a metalloid image, Vigraha of Ganesha, perfect in all proportions, in all dimensions, and wow. Kasturi is now marveling at the artistic skills of whoever made the idol. And he's also amazed because he knows that there's nobody who made the idol. This idol has come from sand. And Swami gave this to one of those industrialists who was sitting there for worship. And this was another miracle that Kasturi witnesses from the sand. And after that, he gets the chance to witness many more such miracles on the Chitravati sands.
Right, before we go on to that, I think a couple of more events in that last trip. But before that, we'll just take a short break. We spoke about, you know, that classmate of Swami who took Swami on that bullock cart ride to Bukkapatnam. Who took Kasturi on that bullock cart ride and dropped him in Bukkapatnam. And during that conversation, Kasturi asked him, do you remember any of the songs that Swami had composed? And so the classmate of Swami starts singing this song. So maybe we'll play out that song and take a short break and we'll come back and we will continue this first trip of Kasturi to Puttaparthi.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in the middle of the first trip that Kasturi, Professor Kasturi, made to Puttaparthi. And the other interesting description, Arvind, which he makes in that is, when the time comes when they have to go to sleep, you know, they've come and he thinks that maybe you just roll out your beds and you sleep. And that's when he finds that everybody is picking up their beddings and going to the open courtyard.
Exactly. And he sees that one metallic cot is being brought and it is placed in the courtyard, and he wonders what is this all about, and that seems to be the center, you know, that is in the center and everybody's beds are aligned around it. And that is when he realizes that this is the cot that on which Swami is going to sleep, and he's so thrilled at this opportunity. Swami is sleeping out in the courtyard, and that very act of sleeping like that, you know, it is so significant. It is like God is the center. And we are all around God. You know, Swami should be the center not only of the courtyard where we sleep, but also of our life. And that is when he starts hearing about different legends that have already started during that time. You know, one of it is, if you are really true in your spiritual pursuit, if you are really a pure soul, Swami will appear to you in your dreams at night. Because though Swami's body appears to be on the cot there, Swami never sleeps. That is the time he goes on so many transcorporeal journeys to save so many devotees, so many places in the world. And if you are a pure enough soul, he will come in your dreams too. That is also another world that he enters. And so Kasturi, with great excitement and anticipation, goes to bed. And he's not able to sleep for a long time because he's constantly opening his eyes and looking at the figure in the center of the courtyard. And there Swami lies without moving, and it is so thrilling for him. And finally, when he manages to go to sleep, he says that he didn't get any dream of Swami. Or, you know, when I was reading this prema, I was just thinking, forget sleeping in Swami's physical presence. I remember those few opportunities I got to sleep in the ground floor of Swami's Trai Brindavan, you know.
Okay.
We were all called in the name of security boys. We were supposed to provide security, whatever that is, whatever that means, to provide security for Swami. We are sleeping in the ground floor of Trai Brindavan. And you know, Swami's room is on the first floor. So the first three nights almost, when I had to sleep there, I got no sleep. You know, as I lay down, I was looking at the ceiling, and I was thinking, just above the ceiling is Swami. Oh my God, oh my God. You know, oh my God, that was the only thought that was going on in me. I never got sleep. Whole night I would be just blankly staring at the ceiling. And because of fatigue, I might slowly drift off into sleep. Suddenly I'll wake up, you know, with a kind of shock, and I'll be, oh God, Swami's here, oh Swami's here. Such is the presence of Swami. I can only imagine how Kasturi and the others might have felt when Swami was actually sleeping in their midst on a cot, out in the open, with no fans or air conditioners, but the wind providing the breeze and the rustle of the trees. Wow, it must have been an ethereal experience.
Right, and he describes how Swami would sleep in the center, and the women to one side and the men to the other side, and Mr. Seshagiri Rao, who is like something, a sort of a personal attendant to Swami, would sleep next to Swami.
And also the priest.
Right, he was also the first priest of the Puttaparthi ashram. And another interesting event which he says is, you know, when Swami says that let's fix a date and time for your daughter's wedding, Swami is talking to Kasturi and his wife, and he suddenly gets up and he goes, you know, into one of the inner chambers and he asks for an almanac. We spoke about how Swami gives so much importance to Uttarayanam and Rahu Kalam and avoiding the bad time and choosing the right time. So he asks for an almanac, and this is another thing which is baffling Kasturi. Because here is one who is, you know, who is apparently breaking traditions. You know, you don't see in him anybody who is like a, you know, descendant of Madhvacharya or any of those kind of Shankaracharya sects or anything. He's so different in the way he dresses, in the way he carries out himself, but also rooted in tradition. He is asking for an almanac to choose a date for the wedding of this couple, the children of this couple. And also, he's also surprised that when did he learn the art of choosing the right time? Because it's not a simple thing.
Exactly.
You know, to know which day is good for marriage and which day is good for any other event. When did Swami learn all these things? And these are the things which fill him with awe. And that is when I think Swami decides that let's have it on the 10th day of Dashera.
Yeah, so the Vijayadashmi of 1950 is fixed for the wedding.
Right.
Between Padma and Balachandran. Balachandran is the son of Parmeshwar Iyer and Padma is Kasturi's daughter. So, in between, you know, from 1948, there are almost 2-3 visits that Kasturi makes to Puttaparthi for Swami's birthday in the same year, 1948, because he's so enamored. Again, Shivratri in 1949. So, he visits Swami in between because he's so thrilled and he has a tough time facing all his colleagues and other members at Bangalore. You know, because they are unable to believe that Kasturi has gone and fallen at the feet of somebody who is proclaimed as God in human form. That to a 22-year-old. You know, somehow we feel that God must be a man with a long beard. First of all, God must be a man. That's what we feel. Second thing is we feel he must have a long beard. He must be a very elderly person. Otherwise, how can he have wisdom?
With a deep baritone voice. which was definitely not what Swami, you know, had.
Exactly, you know, that is one thing. Swami broke all conceptions of God. You know, he here was a person who didn't look, you know, in that sense very masculine. Like, he didn't have huge muscles, he didn't have bulging mustache, long beard, nothing. And he was not old, he was so young. And his voice is so sweet. You know, it is so sweet. And if you see technically, I don't know if you can call it a very powerful voice, beautiful voice. But everybody says Swami's voice is sweet, Swami's voice is powerful, Swami's voice is beautiful. Because it's God's voice, you know, whatever is about God is perfect. And that is why, you know, it was like a shock for Kasturi, because he no way matched anybody's conception of God. And yet, in his heart, Kasturi knew that this has to be God. You know, R.K. Narayan, the great Indian writer, mm-hmm. he writes that when a buffalo was asked, how does God look? The buffalo describes God as a huge, magnificent buffalo with such huge horns. You know, our conception of God is limited by our conception itself, by our thoughts, by what we perceive, by our perspective. And that is exactly what Swami has come to broaden and enlarge. And that was what happened to Kasturi during those first few trips. Till he made that trip again in the October of 1950, during the Dasara time, for the wedding of his daughter.
And you know, those trips you would always describe as, he began to feel that he was in some Andaman islands where he was imprisoned, where his house was and where his job was, and Puttaparthi was the place where he came to actually was his home. That was a feeling which came very shortly, and he, as you said, made multiple trips. And I think, as he himself describes beautifully, they began to become more open to Potti Iyer and his talks about
Swami. In the beginning, he felt Potti Iyer as one big, boring old man who is senile, right. Who has lost all his mind. But now those same things are very interesting for Kasturi. So he calls him again and again and listens to those stories. And he is now gathering and drinking in everything because he has to write the Jeeva Charitra. And now he comes to Puttaparthi. And this is the Dasara time. The Dasara time, we already spoke about how, you know, Swami would go in those chariot processions.
Mm-hmm.
And Kasturi witnesses this chariot procession. And he thinks like any other, you know, he has been to Mysore. He has seen the Dasara procession from Mysore. In fact, the Dasara procession is what has inspired Swami to have a procession in Puttaparthi. In the worldly sense.
Right.
So, according to the Dasara procession that happens in Mysore, Kasturi also, you know, becomes part of the procession and he's walking. But he says he's surprised because nobody is looking to the front. Everybody is walking backwards. And they're looking towards the back. Why? They're looking at Swami in a chariot. And Swami, as we have described, would be carried in different shaped chariots. One's in a swan-shaped chariot, one's in a horse-shaped chariot. Different kind of chariot would be made for each day of Dasara.
Right.
And Kasturi suddenly sees that Swami's brow has become fully red. And kumkum is dropping in copious amounts from there. And he sees more startling things. Swami just plucks flowers from the garland on the chariot and throws them. And they transform into silver coins, gold coins. coins with different gods and goddesses, and each devotee receiving the deity that he loves or that he or she loves. All this when he sees, he thinks he's in some wonderland. He just can't believe his eyes, where every moment some miracle is taking place.
And he says that he thinks about all the science teachers and the scientists he's studied about, and the science he has so strongly believed in all these years, and here is a person who is challenging everything that he's believed in all this while. And the other thing is, you know, he mentions this many times before about his skepticism about Swami's miracles.
Hmm.
Because of his tradition of being with the Ramakrishna Mission, where, you know, we've heard this many times, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa himself discouraged people from going after men of miracles. You know, he would say that it is a
distraction on the spiritual path
and a wastage of siddhis. You know, so he initially had a lot of difficulty in accepting these miracles of Swami, but here he had seen the other side of Swami, and now the miracles have become just one aspect of Swami's personality. So now he's, you know, that idea of not going behind miracles also being challenged. To judge a spiritual person based on his miraculous acts, which he was doing all this while, even that is being challenged now.
You know, because Swami was not a Siddha Purusha or a yogi who has attained all these things. Swami says, it may be ashtaryam for you, but it is sahajam for me. It was his nature. Being miraculous is God's nature. So it was not as if Swami was going out of his way, putting efforts to enthrall an audience the way a magician would do on stage. But, you know, Swami was so straightforward. In fact, I remember a great magician, P.C. Sarkar. He had once challenged Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami also narrated this in one of the Dasara discourses.
Mm-hmm.
He had challenged Swami and he had said, I can do this, can you do that? Swami just did not respond. Means if he was a person who wanted to show off his miracles, what greater stage than this? One of the greatest magicians from India is challenging you and you can beat him. But Swami just said no. And in fact, that person, Swami says in the discourse, challenged him saying that I can eat glass. Can you eat glass? Can you do this and show? And there was one more person who said, I can walk on water. Some certain L. Rao or somebody, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Said, I can walk on water. Can you walk on water? And Swami said that if a pig comes and challenges you saying that I eat excrement, can you eat? Will you stoop down to the level of the pig just to show that you are better than the pig? He says, any kind of challenge is between equals. Swami refused, and in fact history has recorded how these people went and they actually flopped. Mm-hmm. They decided to go ahead even if Swami is not present,
okay,
to show that they can do something, and they flopped. So on Swami's side, it was not as if he was putting in extra efforts to make these miracles. Kasturi saw that, just like everybody else, that Swami's miracles were so natural to him. Just like breathing is for you and me, Swami went about doing miracles without much of a show. In fact, I'll narrate this, you know, something that I saw in a video that is captured.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those Dasara videos, maybe I think in the 1970s or 1980s, the Yagnam is on,
okay,
and Swami is standing. Swami is standing as a Yagna Purusha there. And that Purnahuti takes place, right? There's a bundle which has to be offered to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as the bundle is being lowered into the fire, Swami just waves his hand. For a fraction of a moment, you can see a sparkle there. It is some shining thing, that's all, you know. And silently, you know, Swami just puts it into the bundle and just puts it into the fire. And even those priests who are on stage, there are about 40 of them, even among them, very few notice that actually something Swami has created, because so quickly Swami waves his hand, creates it, puts it, and that's it. And just puts it into the fire. Nobody even notices. In fact, in the video, you can see one priest who is trying to crane his neck and see, hey, what actually happened, because he has caught that. I was just wondering, if there is somebody who can manifest, materialize diamonds. When you materialize a diamond, won't you make a show of it to everybody that, you know, here I have materialized a diamond? No. Swami did it because it has to be done, that's it. There was no show, there was no pomp, he didn't show it to the camera saying that this is what I have created. Just created and put it. And in fact, I think if that video was not there, none of us would have even known that Swami created something for the Purnahuti that year. That is one thing about Swami, right? How many miracles that he has done that nobody knows about also. It is only now that we are discovering and we are getting thrilled at it. That was his nature. And as you said, Kasturi was thrilled by this, where he is performing miracles with great ease without any intent of show or trying to attract people using that.
And, you know, just a little aside, if really popularity and, you know, fame is what Swami wanted, we as a team, as a Radio Sai, wouldn't have gone through ups and downs like we have gone through. You know, we've been on a satellite, we've been removed of a satellite, the satellite company which was giving us a service shut down. If really fame was what he wanted, and here our people were ready to talk about him, he would have given us the best platform. It is just that, you know, you have to go through what you have to go through to learn. This is a setup which is there for you to learn and find fulfillment in life. So it'll have its own, you know, set of challenges and ups and downs.
That is precisely what Swami said when he came here for the inauguration of the studio. He said that there is nothing that I stand to gain from this. Very clearly Swami said. But it is for your joy you want it, so you can do it. Very clear it is. Swami gains nothing from Radio Sai. But Radio Sai lives on Swami, because remove the Sai, it just becomes a useless radio.
Right. And that is another beautiful point which, you know, Professor Kasturi makes in that book. When he was called to write Swami's story, you know, he remembers, and in that book he recollects what happens with Shulman.
Arnold Shulman,
another American who was asked to write a book. And he says, you know, how Shulman was obsessed with his idea of writing a book for Swami, and he was thinking, he was not able to take his mind off it. He goes to US and he's all the while obsessed with this thought that I have to write this book on Swami. And that's when he, you know, catches a flight, comes to Swami, and he's wondering, what am I supposed to write for?
But before that, you have to say that Arnold Shulman was an atheist. I mean, he did not believe in all these Swamis and Babas.
Exactly. And before even a word of the book can be written, a publishing house is already ready to publish the book. And, you know, that's really surprising. If you're a person who is trying to get a book released, you will know that. And everything is falling in place, and this urge to write a book. But what to write? What does Swami want him to write? And then he comes to Swami and he says, Swami, I'm here. What do you want me to write? And Swami says, I don't want the book. I want you. That's why I gave you the desire to write the book. And, you know, Kasturi also recollects that event, and he says that we think that maybe I'm a good writer and Swami is trying to win me over to get a book, good book out of me. But for Swami, it was always the person which was important and not what the person could do for Swami.
Always. In fact, I remember during one talk somebody mentioned that Swami does not build hospitals to get people. I mean, Swami does not get people to fill his hospitals, you know, fill his hospitals in the sense as doctors, as nurses or whatever. But if he has to build a hospital in order to get the nurse, the doctor onto the spiritual path, onto the Godward path for which that soul has been crying for ages, he will even build a free super speciality hospital.
He will even host an international cricket match for that.
Exactly. You know, that is the thing, you know, unless we know this common thread that it is for different individuals to get them. Swami say, as he said to Arnold Shulman, I want you, not the book. That is the same thing he has told Sachin Tendulkar. I mean, it might not be directly physically, but that is the message. I want you, not the cricket. I want you, not the violin. I want you, not the music. I want you, not the art. And unless we know this common thread, it can get very confusing at times. You know, what is a spiritual organization doing? I mean, what is a spiritual head, the God on earth, doing? What on earth is he doing? Holding cricket matches, holding some other concerts, holding competitions, holding a sports meet, holding, you know, all such variety. The world comes in variety, and therefore the Lord has come for the uplift of the world, and therefore he has variety.
It, very true indeed. And
let's now move directly to the marriage, because I think let's perform this wedding before the satsang gets over.
Right.
Swami took care of the wedding, and as you said, showered them with blessings galore, and Kasturi was just overwhelmed. In fact, Kasturi's son, I believe, with his wife had traveled all the way from the United States of America and come to Puttaparthi, and they had done some of their own arrangements, you know, some arrangements to seat.
Some kind of planning, right?
Planning and arrangement, yeah, planning to where the guests will be seated for the wedding, after the wedding for the feast. And, you know, there are those VIPs. I think this VIP thing extends even from that day. There are those VIPs who are, you know, considered as VIPs by others around Swami, and so they have to be given their place. And there are some VIPs even in the family during the wedding.
Right.
So Swami walks into the feast area and he says that there's nothing like VIP. This is your day. And therefore all the chairs around me will be of Kasturi, your immediate family, and the boy's immediate family, and the couple themselves. And Kasturi says it's an unforgettable meal they had, and they were filled more than the feast, they were filled to the brim by Swami's laughter and Swami's constant talking about such beautiful, lofty topics.
Right. And you know, all the while, you can understand Swami was pulling the legs of the new couple. And you know, he talks about the transformation that happens in his son too.
Hmm.
Where he says, initially he's very upset that the plan has been disturbed. Because you can imagine, they would have thought of, you know,
the seating arrangement,
how the food goes to the VIP area and how it goes to the shed where the others are eating. And all this planning has been done. And here is Swami coming in one stroke, everything is changed. And here is so much of confusion, you can understand. And if Swami is around, you can be absolutely assured that there will be a bit of confusion around. And that is what Swami does, you know. He upsets all the plan and changes everything.
And you know, adding to that, physically, what I've seen, as you go physically closer to Swami, the confusion also increases exponentially. Right at where Swami is sitting, if you are among those 2-3 people who are listening to the different instructions Swami is giving, you will be totally confused, because the program announced will be one thing, but Swami's program that is being generated on the fly will be a totally different thing.
And people who are watching will see how beautifully the whole thing was arranged and how it should have been planned so many years before. But it's not the case, because as Swami would say, even my robe doesn't know what I'm planning next. And that's how Swami kept it. And you know, Kasturi says that when they're all sitting down and eating, the son looks at the father and he's of course disturbed by the change of plans. But he says, but this Baba is a Democrat. You know, that's what he says. Because for him, there is nothing like high and low and special and common. He is a person who is seeing everybody as equal. And that floors him a bit. And that is one of the initial things which draws Kasturi's son to Swami.
You know, to each person according to their path. That is how Swami wins hearts over. After the wedding celebrations, you know, it's on the Vijayadashmi day, the holy Vijayadashmi day. And Kasturi witnesses another shocking event. You know, after the wedding gets over, as Swami is walking, Swami suddenly collapses in a heap. He's unconscious. And Kasturi thinks that this is a medical emergency now. Doctors have to be summoned. What do they do? But to his utmost shock, he sees nobody seems to be getting perturbed. Everybody is calm and going about their activity. And he says, what is happening? You know, here is an accident. Here is an incident that requires medical attention. And Swami has collapsed. You know, this is common every Vijayadashmi. He has actually gone to Shirdi. Because it was on Vijayadashmi day that he left his form in Shirdi. So he has gone there to bless devotees. And so it's fine, he'll return. And this kind of, you know, cool attitude by the people shocks Kasturi. Because he feels it's a medical emergency. But then, as they say, within 2-3 hours, Swami returns. And Kasturi is again thrilled. And his thoughts also go along in another direction. The direction that, if Swami actually wanted fame, why did he have to choose to be the reincarnation of Shirdi Baba?
Right.
Why not pick up Murga or Ayappa or Krishna, Rama, Chaitanya, the more popular ones?
Right. Who have established themselves in the name. And you know, that's something which we spoke about. It is not that Swami hijacked the fame of Shirdi Baba, but you know, he just chose somebody who was absolutely unknown in that region. Because when he says, I'm the Baba of Shirdi, nobody in the region actually have ever heard of him except for one or two who have travelled north.
And when Kasturi tries to reason out as to why Swami chose Shirdi Baba, he arrives at the only possible answer. That is, he chose because that is the truth maybe. Why? What other reason? Nothing else makes logical sense. I mean, if you want popularity, there are others you can choose. If you want power, there are others you can choose. Why choose this unknown fakir from a faraway land? Because it is the truth. And that is when Kasturi learns about one particular facet of the name Satya Sai Baba, the Satya part, that he always adheres to truth.
Right.
And that awe, you know, makes him look forward to that interview and Pada Puja that every devotee is given a chance to perform before leaving.
And even as Swami was lying there in the trance, you know, they see that Swami's eyes are open and the gaze is fixed nowhere and Swami is stiff.
Correct.
But suddenly Swami starts speaking in a very, very growlish voice.
Oh yes, I forgot that. Correct. Huh.
And then some people who are going closer to Swami and trying to decipher what Swami is saying, suddenly a couple who are actually from Maharashtra, they said, Swami is speaking in Marathi. And that's when they realized that Swami is giving instructions to somebody in Shirdi in Marathi.
And Kasturi's wonders never cease, you know, because during the Pada Puja where you get a chance to worship Swami's feet, during that, at the end of that Pada Puja, he is thrilled at the chance to touch Swami's feet. Swami waves his hand, palm and creates Vibhuti. And now Swami distributes his Vibhuti to everybody. Kasturi also receives it. And again, you know, he's shocked because when he puts that Vibhuti in his mouth, he gets a saltish kind of taste. But he hears the shout of glee from a little boy in the front who says, "Wow, this is so sweet." So he realizes that the same batch of Vibhuti produced is sweet to some, bitter to some, salty to some, to each one according to his need. And that is how Swami has always been.
And you know, describing that event in the shock which he's going through, moment after moment, he just says, you know, he says, "My horizon was being enlarged beyond measure, and I had to renounce the coziness I had gained from narrowness of thought."
Wow, beautiful English. You know, that's all I can say.
How beautifully he puts it, because that is the fact. We all are cozy in the narrowness of our thought. And we
enjoy that.
Right, no. And we resist somebody trying to come
broaden
and expand and broaden our vision. But here Swami was doing it so effortlessly. And another thing he says, you know, when they do Pada Puja to Swami, he realizes that generally, you know, some of these traditional Pada Pujas done to Matadhipatis, you have gold coins being offered.
There's flowers, a dakshina.
Right. But here Swami, who doesn't allow anything in the name of money or in the name of offering.
No money offered at all.
Right. And that is something else which also sees, you know, he sees that this is a very, very pure form of worship that Swami is encouraging in the name of Pada Puja. He said there was no price tag attached to that feat.
Exactly. You know, I happened to meet a long-standing devotee, John Moore.
Okay.
You know, John Moore, he's from Australia. And he came to Puttaparthi after the Vietnam War. And I think we'll be interviewing him sometime because his experiences are phenomenal. And when I asked him as to why he came to Swami, you know, because that was the time there are so many other spiritual personages.
Right.
He says, the one thing that struck him was as soon as he arrived, he stood at the Ganesh gate and he saw a board which said, "No offering in cash, nothing, please don't make any offerings here." He said, "That's it, I decided that this is the place of my calling." Because he said, every other place there were people wanting him for money. And he said, here was a place that did not want me for what I had in my pocket, but for what I had in my heart. And that's why I knew this is, I mean,
and
so,
this is really something which people are really odd with, because I met somebody who, for the first time coming to Parthi, you know, this was when Swami was physically there with us. And this couple came and asked us, you know, where do we go for darshan? So it was just outside the Kulwant Hall. I just pointed out to the hall and said, this is the place. Swami has not yet come, but you can go and sit. So the next thing they asked was, where can we buy the tickets? I said, there are no tickets, you can just go in there. No, where do we pay the money and get the permission to go into the hall? I said, there is nothing like that. You just ensure that you don't step in with your slippers, that's all. Keep all your things outside and you can go in. And that couple just could not believe what I said. They said, you mean to say we don't have to pay anything to see Swami? We are just allowed to go and have his darshan? And that is when it struck me that, you know, what was so common for us and which did not strike us as something so special is something which people cannot really...
Today it strikes me, Prem, it strikes me every time, you know. That is one of the reasons why I have not been in my life to Tirupati temple to date. Because it has got so strongly ingrained, somehow I feel guilty having to buy a ticket to go for darshan. I had been to Srirangam temple recently and there also, you know, I had to pay an amount. For if you want to do this, if you want to make an offering, pay for everything. It somehow, you know, boils my blood. Nobody seems to get affected. But then I realized that is the kind of upbringing that we have gone through, that we feel that anything about God is freely available for everyone. How can you charge? So, as you say, we have got so used to it, it in some way, you know, maybe a negative effect, it happens that I am not able to enter any other temple where money is charged for darshan. That is a side effect, but I don't regret having the side effect at all. I am so happy because any temple I go, I cross my heart, I see only Swami, and it is so beautiful, and I feel so thrilled to have this chance to see him in his different forms.
And dear listeners, you will agree with us, just recollecting these stories, we are not just talking about the past, we are not just talking about some history we truly are reliving it, because when we read the words of Kasturi, be it in Satyam Shivam Sundaram or his autobiography, The Living God,
Loving God.
The Loving God, we are transported to that time, and we can imagine what it would have been to see Swami, what it would have been to see Swami in the midst of the backward Puttaparthi then, and what kind of feelings it would have aroused. So we will continue that even next week. Those first few years that Kasturi spent in the presence of Swami, the way he visited, and finally how he came and settled here.
And we are continuing with Kasturi not because we want to portray Kasturi as a very special devotee, though he is. It is only because his experiences give us a very good idea of those times and help us in progressing and furthering this discussion on Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
Right. But you'll have to wait for 1 week for that. We'll meet you next week, same time, 12:30 p.m. with the next episode of Afternoon Satsang and another week of impressions that left Kasturi forever a devotee at his feet. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.